Neighbors, welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. This is episode 29 of season 3. The show is brought to you by Kitchen Table Communications and the Voice of Bombay Radio Network. And we are dead chuffed that season 3 is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. When we hear discussions about the gradual shift from oil and gas to a more sustainable model of energy, it's often related to a regional or national context. But a similar kind of transition can also happen on a household scale. Some of you listeners may even as I speak, be on this kind of an evolution from one type of lifestyle to another. Today, we're heading for Outport Acres in Bloomfield on the Bonavista Peninsula, where we meet up with farmer, microgreens producer, and beekeeper Adam Furlong. He worked in oil and gas for a decade or so, but gradually farming took over his life, and he and his family bought a property, moved from town, and took up growing food full time. It was a gradual life change, though the pandemic prompted them to move along a little bit faster, and they are glad that it did.
I did a lot of reading and research and everything on small-scale agriculture, and it seemed like microgreens was a really easy way to get into the food production industry. What I'm doing here is the market gardening style of farming, which is at its core is rooted around sustainability and environmental stewardship. More support from the government for small-scale agriculture would go a long way.
We've got sunflower, mustard greens,
sweet corn, arugula, broccoli, radish, fava beans,
dill, cilantro and basil,
garlic chives, mellow mix, broccoli rabe, crimson clover and purple kohlrabi.
There are many ways to make a living as a farmer. Some require lots of land and equipment, but some are more economical in that respect. Growing microgreens would be an example of the latter. It's also a type of food production that can be somewhat more gradual in ramping up, from home consumption to farmers markets to beyond. As our guest today states, the key is to develop a good process, a fine product, maintain the quality of that product, and a consistency of supply, and success will follow. We meet up in midwinter at his farm and home. During the interview, we keep going in and out of places, hoop tunnels, microgreen production spaces, packing units, taking off and putting on coats. So there are a variety of background noises, just like your average Outport. Join us.
Adam Furlong, I'm the owner of Outport Acres. We're in Bloomfield on the Bonavista Peninsula at my farm location.
And you grew up not far from here?
Yeah, I grew up in Plate Cove. It's about a half an hour drive from here.
What brought you back here?
I lived in town for 14 years. I went to Marine Institute and I worked for 10 years in the oil and gas industry. And I spent a bit of time away, like offshore and all that kind of stuff. And we've got two young kids now, so I was kind of trying to find something else that would be better for family life while also being something that I was interested in. And I ended up working in an oil and gas, like an engineering office in CBS. It was only like literally like 2 minutes away from our house, so that worked out good. But then I was kind of doing that and this at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I was just gradually gravitating away from that industry and that career towards this instead.
Mm-hmm. So you say this, what is this?
Farming. Basically what I'm doing here is the market gardening style of farming, which is at its core is rooted around sustainability and environmental stewardship, and so everything that we do here, there's no synthetic fertilizers, there's no pesticides or any of that kind of stuff. So it's all based on soil health and microbiology and stuff to maintain a good growing environment which will produce healthy crops.
It seems like a bit of a, well, just in the stereotypical way, a switch from oil and gas to sustainable farming.
how does it feel?
It
feels really good. Like I said, I was in that industry for 10 years and it was good while it was good, but then the last few years it was really volatile and you didn't really know what was going on, especially when the pandemic started. It feels good now to be, you know, own my own business and be here doing something that is good for the environment, good for the community, and good for the province.
And you have a couple of tunnels set up here.
Yeah, there are two Caterpillar tunnels. They're 16 feet wide by 100 feet long each. Yeah. So it's like a 3,200 square foot growing space. They're not heated. They're just not set up for that. So I'm mainly just using these for season extension, like to get started earlier in the year and to run later into the year. Like I was getting salad greens, tomatoes and peppers and all that kind of stuff out of these right up probably 2 weeks before Christmas this year. So I was transplanting all of our tomatoes, peppers and lettuces. We also direct seed some crops, like I was doing some French breakfast radishes, hackeri turnip, like gourmet salad turnip.
Oh, they're big these days. Yeah, this year. Yeah, this is nice. The year of hackeri turnip.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I couldn't keep them. It was as fast as I could grow them, they were gone. If I had 10 times more than what I grew, I think they all would have sold.
Is there anything in there right now?
I planted about 500 tulips.
Oh, tulips, okay.
But they're just bulbs that are lying dormant now till the spring. Hoping to get those for like cut flower bouquets and stuff for around Mother's Day.
So you put this just over top the soil?
Yeah, it was really good soil here. Like I cleared some of the trees and it was all just 500 or 1,000 years of decomposing forest. It was really good. It was all just like a nice humus. I added a lot of amendments to it last year, like certified organic chicken manure and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, and you just moved here 2020?
September 2020. This upcoming season will be the third. We didn't really get to do much in 2020 because it was September when we moved here. So I kind of just...
Not a good time to plant.
I spent the fall clearing trees and then the following spring we built the greenhouses.
And you irrigate as well?
Yeah, irrigation system set up. I haven't even really used those yet. I got them with the kits just in case I would need them. But most of the crops that I've been growing in here work better with drip irrigation.
Does it get pretty hot in here in the summer?
Yeah, the sides come up. It gets held up by these hooks here. Yeah. So July and August when things start getting really hot, I leave the door open and pull the sides up to get a little bit of a breeze coming through. And if you didn't do that, it'd probably get 50 or 60 degrees in here. This year, I'm going to be growing twice as many tomatoes as I was last year in one tunnel. And I'm going to be doing about four times as many peppers as I was doing last year in the other tunnel. Yeah. So I'll do that in the two center bed and the two outside beds in both tunnels. I'll be doing other things like salad greens and baby root vegetables.
Right. So you've got a little walkway with mostly rock kind of in between the different beds.
I basically just raked as much of the rock as I could out of the beds into the walkway. So it works really well for drainage. If we get a lot of rain, you will get some groundwater coming over the surface underneath the plastic and it'll come in. But with the rocks in the walkways, it kind of funnels the water into the walkways rather than washing away the beds. Harnois is a company in Quebec. Yep. They do permanent heated greenhouse systems. And I've already had one of their representatives down here last year and had a look at the land and stuff. Yep. And he took some notes and he went back and did a design for a greenhouse for me and sent me a quote. Yep. So in the next 2 or 3 years, I'm planning on getting that put in. And that'd be a more automated, heated and climate controlled greenhouse that I could put in. And I could grow stuff 12 months of the year. And that one would be 40 by 100, so it would be slightly bigger than both of these put together. All the land is very gradually sloped towards the south, so it's really ideal for growing stuff.
Can you bank it into a south bank a little bit, these earth sheltered kind of things?
Yeah, or, I think so. Like the rest of these trees here, once I get those cleared, I'm going to get some heavy equipment to come in here because they'll need to dig out all the stumps and like the really big boulders and stuff and get rid of that. So when they're doing that, I'm going to make sure that they don't level the land because the really gradual south facing slope is ideal for this. So I'd like to keep it.
You've got a bit of protection here from the wind, but they've been holding up.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Our worst wind is northeast, comes right across the bay. So I left a 25 or 30 foot line of trees between us and the water, and I'm going to leave that because it's a great windbreak.
And the name Outport Acres, is that?
Just because it's an outport. I was racking my brains for weeks. I was trying to come up with something Newfoundland related for a name of the business, and my wife actually came up with Outport Acres. But it didn't make a whole lot of sense when we were living in CBS. Not really an outport.
And then you have other growing facilities as well.
Yeah, so we do about 50 to 60 pounds average of microgreens every week. And
which is a lot of microgreens.
Yeah, definitely. That fluctuates in the middle of the summer when tourism season's in full swing. All of the restaurants are extremely busy. This time of year is typically a little slower, I guess, after everybody gets back from Christmas and New Year's and everything. They're just kind of turning into hermits for a little bit. But it hasn't been that way so far this year. I've been flat out as much as I can handle.
Did you build this then?
The shell of the building was here when we bought the property because previous owners had a motorhome.
Because the garage door is pretty tall.
And he just used to store it in here in the wintertime, but there was nothing in here. It was gravel on the floors. There was no electrical when we moved in here. So I spent the last 7 or 8 months finishing this. Okay. So I had this entire place done up in drawings and I kind of had it specialized to be exactly what I wanted for the last 3 years to make this whole operation efficient. And this whole area here is going to be a wash and pack station for everything that comes out of the greenhouses and the fields and stuff. And then these are going to be greens washing bins. It's like a bubbler.
So
I put some pipes down in here that just create bubbles and agitate the water and clean all the greens. And then I've got a large green
spinner to spin out all the water. And then I'm going to have a drying rack to get the greens nice and dry. Because if you package it up and put it in cold storage while it's still any bit wet at all, it's not going to last any time. So you really need to have the proper equipment and systems in place to get it as dry as possible before you put it in storage.
How long do they last if you dry them correctly?
You'll get at least 2 weeks out of them. Probably more than that.
Do you have a piece of music that I can use here?
Yeah, I'm tired. Hey, Google, play me some music. Let's just see what she comes up with. It's using recommendations from what I'm usually listening to.
Oh, okay. Sounds very nice.
I'm not sure what this is, but I'll tell you in a second. This is a really good song, actually. Sturgill Simpson.
Do you know the name of the song?
Oh, hey, Google. What song is this?
You're listening to I Don't Mind by Sturgill Simpson.
I don't mind.
There's a lonely feeling I carry that will follow me all my days. I walked out on heart you were nursing, turned my back on the love you saved. Well, just when my clouds were drifting, my plan got rearranged. But there ain't no going back now, and ain't no way that I can change. I believe that I found God about the same time that I found you. All that stuff about heaven. Out at sea in a storm, and when I wake up every morning, I roll over to find you still gone. I'm alone in a way that I've never been since you left me behind. If you think
Sturgill Simpson with his song I Don't Mind, as requested by my guest Adam Furlong. Well, to be more truthful, it was requested by his computer, but that sounds a bit too spooky. Today I'm in Bloomfield at the Outport Acres, talking about microgreens and more. Let's head back to that conversation.
The retailing, you've got some memberships or whatever, or CSA kind of thing?
Yeah, that was something we just started when the pandemic started, because when everything first kicked off with COVID and the farmer's market shut down and the restaurants shut down, the grocery stores were still stayed steady. Well, I've got 5 grocery stores in St. John's.
And do people get a subscription, like for X number of weeks, so much a week?
Yeah, so you sign up for, on our website, we've got 3 different options. You can get 2 packages of microgreens a week, 3 packages or 4 packages a week for a 4-week period. Yeah. And then once that 4-week period is up, it'll repeat if you want it to. Most of our customers have just been getting weekly microgreens all year round for years.
So do you deliver or do
yeah
you
so I've
here?
Got a bunch of local customers that just pick up here, but every Wednesday I leave here and drive 2.5 hours to St. John's, deliver to Clarenville along the way, and then go on to St. John's and drive all around delivering to all of our home delivery subscription customers and grocery stores and restaurants. Makes for a long Wednesday.
Why microgreens?
Well, when we lived in CBS, we had like a third of an acre of land, so I wasn't really going to be able to do much in the way of commercial farming. I did a lot of reading and research and everything on small-scale agriculture, and it seemed like microgreens was a really easy way to get into the food production industry. You only needed a small space, and you could do it all year round, and so I started doing that and brought it to the farmer's market. I don't have any experience or any history in food production or food service, so I just brought it to the farmer's market
St. John's.
Kind of just grew arms and legs from there. Like, I had a lot of repeat customers coming back week after week, and they were saying that they'd like to be able to get it during the week rather than just at Saturday. Right. So they were like, this is the grocery store that I go to. I know the produce manager. Why don't you go talk to him? So that's how I got into the grocery stores. And the guy who was next to me, I don't know if you know Sean Dawson.
Oh, yes.
He was next to me at the farmer's market. So I mean, all the chefs and everybody know him really well. Right. And he introduced me to a lot of chefs and helped us get going in the whole restaurant business.
Yeah. Do they ask for things that you aren't growing yet? Like, are they a source of new ideas?
Yeah, I'm pretty constantly getting asked for things that we don't grow from chefs. And some of the things that they've asked for are now regular things on our offering. And I actually just last week had a chef ask me for three or four different things that we don't grow. And they were all things that I've been considering. So I might order some seeds for those.
So what kind of medium do you grow in?
It was just like a potting mix. So we use the one with the mycorrhizal fungus in it. It's just a naturally occurring fungus that is in the soil that really promotes healthy root growth on vegetables.
Do you add anything more to it at this point?
No. Yeah. When we were growing the starts for the tomatoes and peppers and all that kind of stuff, I would add in like worm castings and some of that chicken manure that I mentioned. Yep. But with microgreens, they're mainly just using the energy to store it in the seeds at that young stage. Yeah. Yeah. So there's not really much benefit to adding any nutrient to the soil for microgreens.
The honeybees, you got them after the fact, or have you always been interested in bees?
No, I never really even thought about honeybees until 2 years ago. And then I saw Paul and Brenda Dinn, Adelaide's Newfoundland Honey, in the Goulds there. They started a program called Become a Beekeepers. You could sign up to get a starter nuke hive from them. That came with a year's worth of mentoring. I went in and got it from him, and I didn't know anything about beekeeping at the time, and just brought it home, and he walked us through the whole process, and we got it all set up. So we had one hive the first year, and then last year was the second year we had it. We split that hive into two, so now we've got two. They're really good for pollinating certain crops, especially things like tomatoes are not going to grow unless they're pollinated. So once I get the rest of those trees cut, I'm going to have a lot of field space that has crops growing, so it'll be really good for the crops to have the bees there, but it'll also be really good for the bees producing honey because there'll be so much vegetation around.
Is there a nucleus of people who are growing microgreens in the province who talk to each other about strategies?
There's a few around. I know that there were a couple that came and went before I started. Yeah, there's only really a couple of other microgreens growers in the province that I'm aware of anyway. There's Green Farm in Mount Pearl, and then there was a couple of other ones that popped up. Some of them are gone now, and some of them are still hanging around. But
this is all of our packaging here. Packaging is made of corn resin.
Well, that's corn resin, so that'll break down.
They're more expensive to buy, but we started day one with these kind of packaging.
Yeah.
I just couldn't justify producing that much plastic waste. They're not ideal, but I don't think there is an ideal packaging solution. There's no commercial composting facility in Newfoundland, which is a big problem. But I have used it through just our backyard composter that we had in town. And like when you get the compost out of the bottom of the compost, it was still there, but it was fragile and broken apart, and I just used to run it through two or three times, and it would break down after a while.
Your customers, do they talk about packaging? Is that
definitely. I've had a lot of people mention it to me, and I've had a few people who didn't realize that it was the corn resin packaging saying, oh, it's a beautiful product, but it's too bad you're using so much plastic. And then they'd be like, actually, the other thing is that the company that we buy it from, 25% of their profits are donated back to like social and environmental programs, and they use the whole carbon offset thing to offset the amount of carbon that they do produce. Since before we started this, still right up until now, I'm constantly trying to find different packaging options. And from everything that I've looked at, this seems to be the best option.
What percentage would it add to, like if you just got a regular old plastic or styrofoam, is this 50% more or 25% more?
I can't remember the exact numbers now, but I did sit down and work out all the numbers when we started. It was definitely above 50% more. It's considerably more expensive to use this than it is to use just like plastic clamshell packaging. This is all of the different microgreens varieties that we've got. Right now we've got sunflower, mustard greens, sweet corn, arugula, broccoli, radish, fava beans, dill, cilantro, and basil. I do a small amount of garlic chives. And then I've got a mellow mix, broccoli rabe, crimson clover, and purple kohlrabi. That's primarily what goes into our salad mix microgreen package.
So where did your knowledge of how to do microgreens come from?
I basically did a lot of reading about them, a bunch of videos on YouTube of people who were growing them. And when we started the business, I got in consultation with David Burchard in Airdrie, Alberta. He has a microgreens business up there. Yep. And I think they're doing like 1,500 trays of microgreens a week. So I had a few consultations with him to try to pick his brain and see what worked for him and what didn't. Yep. And
When you talk to your customers, how does that change the way you feel about what people are looking for in their food?
It was really nice, actually, because I never had any history in this type of industry. And it was just really nice to show up at the farmer's market with a whole bunch of product that I put so much work into growing and packaging and getting ready for the market. And then when I'd get there, especially I found the repeat customers, people would come back and be like, oh, the stuff I had last week, I really liked it. I want some more of that, but I want to try some of this too. So it just made you feel really good about what you were doing.
It feels like you're so far away now, and I'm stuck out here all by myself. All the things I wish I told you, still inside my mind, bottled and shelved. In my dreams, although I can hear you, there's a darkness that hides you. So I search all around trying to feel you. All I find is a world without light. There's a world I want to leave, and a world where I want to stay. There's a dream that I believe.
I Don't Mind by Sturgill Simpson, one of the songs that my guest today, Adam Furlong, listens to as he works in his farm office above the microgreens room. Let's head back to the final section of my chat with Adam, where I start out by asking for any advice he'd have for other emerging food producers. Do you have advice for other people? Like if somebody was thinking of doing this, they've done a little bit of gardening and so on, but they want to take the next step. How did you decide to take that next step?
I was doing the microgreens while I was still working in an office job for probably a year, and this started getting busier and busier to the point where I'd get up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and put in 2 or 3 hours work at the microgreens and then go to my office job for 8 or 10 hours and then come home and do more with the microgreens for another 2 or 3 hours every evening. And I was just kind of seeing the trend that this was building steam and getting more of a sustainable business option for me. I was kind of looking for an out to get away from my other career and start doing this. And then the pandemic started and everything got really volatile in that whole industry. So they were laying some people off, and I was like, well, I was looking for a way to justify just stepping away from that and doing this full time, so here's the opportunity. And I finished up with that company, and then it was within a month or something we were putting in offers on properties out here.
So the pandemic was kind of a useful nudge for you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I like to think that I was on this track anyways, and I would have eventually just quit my job and came and done this and everything, but like that's a pretty big decision to make when you've got a steady job, reliable income and all that kind of stuff. So it would have been a hard decision to make, but the pandemic kind of just said, well, now you don't really have another option. I just ran with it and it worked out really good.
I see a Mums label there. You get some of them from Mums?
That's where we get all of our microgreen
seeds. Yeah.
I have gotten some from other companies in the past, but right now that's where all of our seeds come from. And they're probably the most well-known and most reliable microgreen seed supplier in Canada.
What companies? I mean, you use Mums for this, but what other companies?
I'm using Johnny Seed in the States, William Dan in Ontario. I found they're a really good seed supplier. I ordered some stuff from West Coast Seeds in BC. I use Gay Seed in town for a lot of stuff. And there's been another few that I've noticed on like social media and stuff pop up recently with Revival Seeds. I think they're in Nova Scotia and stuff. So I think I might try ordering some stuff from those smaller seed suppliers this year and see what they've got to offer.
In the wintertime here, how many customers do you have per week?
For the subscription, we have an average of around 45 usually. And then I've got 5 grocery stores in town. There's one in Clarenville. And then our restaurants kind of fluctuates too. I've probably got 7 or 8 restaurants that buy things from us on a regular basis. And then probably another 4 that buy stuff from us on an occasional basis.
So you talked about building a greenhouse and so on. That sort of expansion, are you able to handle that? Or are you going to just have to get employees or so on?
Well, last year with the 2 greenhouses that we've got, along with the microgreens, because we do the microgreens all year round, not just in the winter. So doing those and the two greenhouses and the honeybees and all that kind of stuff, I was pretty maxed out last year doing it all by myself. So I think this upcoming year, I'm probably going to look into hiring a person or two, maybe one time, one full-time and one part-time person. Right. And just try to do more than I did last year.
What's one of your favorite foods?
My favorite food is pizza. I can't grow pizza, but I can grow a lot of the stuff that goes on it. All the tomatoes and peppers and arugula and everything that we were growing.
You got a lot of ventilation.
There's a probe over there that reads the temperature and humidity. Yeah, and then once the temperature hits 24 degrees, or if the humidity went above 60, then that cups in and starts blowing air out of the room.
It's automatic.
Try to automate as much as we can. Yeah. Like, the lights are all on timers.
How many hours a day are the lights on?
16. The dehumidifier runs 24/7. The circulation fans and the ventilation fan runs 24/7. Yeah. But the lights are on the 16 and 8 schedule. The plants are just like us. They do need some dark time just to rest. I kind of like watering them by hand, because then you're checking on everything every day to make sure that everything's growing well. And
are there diseases that they suffer from?
Depending on the crop, you can get some fungus growth, but that's generally only if you don't have a good growing environment. Basically, fungus likes cool, dark, damp places. So if you just don't allow any of those things, no stagnant air with the ventilation and the air circulation in there. And if you keep the temperatures stable at around 22, 23 degrees, you don't really have any issues with mold or fungus or anything like that. There are definitely some insect pests. We haven't had any issues with that for our microgreens, but if some got in there, like if you had like some gnats or anything like that get in there, then they could definitely multiply pretty rapidly in there.
Would you use a beneficial insect? Or the
I would. I haven't had to, but that's what I've been banking on. If I ever did have an issue like that, just go in and open up a pack of ladybugs or something and let them take care of it. Once I get the rest of the land developed, I'd like to get into some event hosting, like maybe sell some tickets for an evening for people to come in here, and maybe get one or two of the chefs that I deal with on a regular basis to come out and cook a meal. And
there's a lot of work at trying to increase food security in the province. You started out and you're working on this. Are there things that would really have helped you?
I don't think that anyone should be relying on the government for anything, but more support from the government for small-scale agriculture would go a long way. When I sat down and did up a business plan and figured it out, I wasn't incorporating any government income to make the business sustainable or successful. But if you can come up with a business model that works and is going to work, then I think the government should be supporting that. And I think more small-scale agriculture like this is the real answer, because you're not going to get 10 more large 200-acre farms across the island. It's just not going to happen. You don't have the people with the amount of money or resources to go into creating something that big. But if you did 50 more, like mine, peppered across the province, I think that would make a huge difference to the amount of local food production. I think the local food production numbers that they lean on, you know, 10%, 15%, 20% local food production, I don't even think that that really takes into account half of what it should take into account. It's probably a little more than that if you take into account backyard farmers and homesteaders and all that kind of stuff that are just making their own food. It seems to me like those numbers are kind of coming from just the large chain grocery stores.
Or the amount of acreage in production that tends to be what they use.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, this looks great. It's a wonderful operation.
It was fine the way I was doing it before, but it was less efficient and it was more difficult and everything. Yeah. So I spent a lot of time and a lot of money over the last 8 months getting all this set up and properly done exactly the way that I wanted it. So everything is more efficient.
Well, thanks. I should let you go. And hey, Google, can you edit this interview for me?
Sorry, I don't understand.
They're a long way from taking over the world.
Yet. Okay, well, fair enough. Maybe that's a good thing. Does it know anything about local food?
I don't know.
Hey, Google, can you tell me what microgreens are?
According to Wikipedia, microgreens are vegetable greens harvested just after the cotyledon leaves have developed with one set of true leaves. They are used as a nutrition supplement, a visual enhancement, and a flavor and texture enhancement. Microgreens are used to add sweetness and spiciness to foods.
Thanks very much. Thanks, Adam.
Yeah,
good luck.
No problem. Yeah. Thanks for coming.
And thanks to Google for the comic relief there.
I just couldn't justify producing that much plastic waste. They're not ideal, but I don't think there is an ideal packaging solution. Most of our customers have just been getting weekly microgreens all year round for years. Outport Acres didn't make a whole lot of sense when we were living in CBS. Not really an outport. people would come back and be like, oh, the stuff I had last week, I really liked it. I want some more of that, but I want to try some of this too. So it just made you feel really good about what you were doing.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of the show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. To send me a message, email me at iemke@grenfell.mun.ca. For music on today's show, we heard singer and actor Sturgill Simpson with the song I Don't Mind. The theme music, Cluckold Hen, was performed this week by Sarah McQuaid. This show was made possible by a grant from the Community Radio Fund of Canada and is produced by the Voice of Bombay Radio Network and Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. I'll be right here. Happy trails.
More small-scale agriculture like this is the real answer.